Hey there, thanks for coming. Take a seat.
It's time to retire to the drawing room.
When your brother or sister has a disability, life can take on unexpected dimensions. Siblings Australia hopes to focus attention on those dimensions and perhaps garner support for the families experiencing the difficulties. Kate Strom is the director, and she's my guest in the drawing room along with Amy Patra, someone who knows the issues very well. Thank you so much for coming in. Kate, why your interest in this?
Well, it did stem from personal experience. I grew up with an older sister who had cerebral palsy that included intellectual and physical disability. And I had spent a lot of time, I guess, working through what the impact of that was, and eventually wrote a book about it, and through that also wanted to develop something in Australia along the lines of a program I'd seen in the US when I was visiting there. And fortunately, the head of psychological medicine at the Children's Hospital helped me establish the organisation 18 years ago. And we've been going since then, developed a national, international reputation for the work that we do with siblings and parents and professionals.
What was the impact of that on you, Kate?
Well, I think probably the biggest was isolation and a lack of understanding of what I felt. And certainly there was a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress in our family. It was a very loving family, but there was also a lot of stress. And I think the issues can range from grief. There was a lot of grief for what my sister couldn't do, grief for my parents, but also grief for myself, that I didn't have a sister that I could do the things that my friends could do with their sisters, and the guilt that I could do things that she couldn't, and a range of other things in terms of, you know, embarrassment and things that I didn't understand when I was little. I mean, it's much easier as an adult to understand and make sense of things, but as a child, you don't really understand what's going on around you.
There is something kind of natural about parents giving attention to the child that needs more support. It's just an instinct, I think, that you'd turn to the child that obviously has higher needs. But of course, that has an impact on the other children.
And that's right. And as a parent, I understand that if you've got a child who's unwell or a child is vulnerable, then you do focus your attention on that child. In this situation, it goes on for years and years and years. And I think the impact on a child of feeling that you're less important in the family than the child with disability can have major implications for a person's sense of identity and self-worth. And I think it's very hard for other people to understand that.
Kate, when you talk about disability, what do you actually mean? You say mental as well as physical?
Yes, in our context, it means people with disability, both intellectual and physical, but also mental illness, chronic illness can sometimes also, the issues might be different for siblings, but often what they need is fairly similar.
Amy, you grew up with a brother with autism. What did that mean for you as his sister?
It meant a lot of things, really. A lot of what Kate has just said. It's just really, it was really stressful growing up for mum and dad. And as a sibling, you see that. And because my brother was older than me, it's what I've always known. So I guess growing up, always seeing mum and dad really stressed because his behaviour was really chaotic. So coming home to a stressful home, not having anyone to talk to about it because mum and dad were just too stressed and they don't have time really to deal with your issues. And you just learn that it's not their fault, but you just learn that you can't really have any problems and they're not really there for you emotionally to turn to because of what they're dealing with the sibling.
So you felt that your brother got significantly more attention than you?
He definitely did. And I mean, he definitely needed more attention, but it definitely, you just learn that it's really hard for you to accept attention. You don't know really how to deal with it a lot of the times growing up. I found that quite difficult also.
You said your brother was unpredictable, that the situation at home was often chaotic.
Yeah.
Did that cause anxiety for you as well as a child?
Definitely. Anxiety and depression. I was quite socially anxious when I was younger, and definitely depression was a big thing because you learn to repress your feelings because you can't really talk about it. You want to, but you just learn that you can't and there's not really anyone there for you to go to because, as I said, mum and dad, not that they meant to, but they were just so busy with him. So there's, lots of things that come up, really.
Kate, are siblings often left out of the equation? I mean, both in terms of their needs, but also in terms of what they can offer in those families?
Well, I think there's a number of issues here, and certainly they're left out of the equation. I mean, there's a lot of funding and attention given to parents of children with disability and also to people with disability, as there should be. But we're the only organisation that's advocated for siblings over the last 18 years and provided services to them. We're the only ones that focus on siblings. Certainly some other organisations provide some services. But for the last 8 years, we haven't had any funding, any core funding at all. We might get little bits of project funding, and I can talk about some of the projects. But so at a policy level, they're overlooked, at a policy and government level. And they are overlooked in the service system. And I think the point that you mentioned about what they can contribute as well. And we know that many people with disability become quite isolated as they get older, and yet the relationship that's likely to be the longest of any with that person with disability, we know so little about it. I mean, what are some of the barriers to those relationships? What are some of the enhancers to that relationship? And certainly I know of siblings who haven't had support, who it all just becomes too hard and they move away from their family. And I think that's a huge tragedy because everyone misses out. On the other hand, there are some siblings who are providing so much support. We just did a survey as part of a project that we're running at the moment. And the amount of time and energy that siblings are putting into providing emotional support, helping their brother or sister with transport or all sorts of things, medical appointments, and that is really very much overlooked. I think people don't understand the amount of support that siblings are providing across the lifespan of a person with disability. It's just not recognised.
You talk about policy responses in all of this. How could policy be different to provide services or help to siblings when families are facing these difficulties?
Well, I think the first thing is they need to be mentioned in policy. In the UK, for example, the Children Act mentions that brothers and sisters of children with disability need to be part of any support approaches. And I think it's crucial that these children and adults are recognised. There needs to be one government department that focuses on this group of vulnerable children and adults. We know that siblings have higher rates of anxiety and depression. The Australian Institute for Family Studies showed us that. And certainly the work that we've done over 18 years has shown that a lot of siblings do struggle with their own mental health problems. And I actually have quite a few parents say to me that the sibling becomes more of a worry to them than the child with disability. So I think that siblings need to be recognised, but again, as the only organisation over 18 years, we've developed a lot of experience and expertise, and our future is very uncertain. I've been working mainly in a voluntary capacity the last 8 years, and like I said, we've got some project funding to do a couple of specific projects, but they finish next year, and I can't keep doing this. I'm getting a bit older, and so unless I can do some succession planning and train other people up to take over, then a lot of that experience is going to be lost.
If you're just tuning in, you're in the Drawing Room, and my two guests tonight are Kate Strom, Director of Siblings Australia, and Amy Patra. She grew up with a brother with autism. Amy, did you feel comfortable inviting friends to your house? What sort of environment was provided in that household for you to be able to kind of do all the things that kids should be doing?
I mean, if I had the option, I would have chosen to go, to go to their house. I often would have sleepovers with friends like that I'd play netball with, and usually all the time I'd prefer to go there. I mean, they could have come over, but I certainly enjoyed it more going to their place, and I think they probably preferred it as well. Yeah, certainly any chance to get out of the house really was, I kind of took as much as I could just to get away from all the chaos.
And you have another brother, I understand, Amy.
Yes.
Do you talk too much about this? Did you share your feelings growing up about this? Because obviously you were in a pretty similar position, you'd guess.
Yeah. I mean, every sibling is different, even if we are in the same family. I mean, he's the oldest brother and my autistic brother is in the middle. And we both have different experiences, but also a lot of similarities. We both struggle with anxiety and depression, I think, because of that. And I mean, I sort of guess that it may have been a bit harder for him being the eldest, only because, you know, the elders generally take on a lot more responsibility.
Yeah, I as the youngest child, I watch my sister who's the eldest and I think, whoa, I'm so glad I'm the youngest child. I think the elders do play that role. I wonder, many years later, obviously you were both adults now, what conversations you had with your parents as adults about those experiences. Was there a discussion about the impact it had on you, Amy?
Yeah, I sort of got help for my issues in my early 20s. I'm now in my mid-30s. And when I started talking to Mum about it, she used to get quite teary. You know, there's so much guilt that, you know, she feels like she let us down. And, you know, when I started telling her about my experiences, obviously that wasn't what I wanted, but they did the best that they could with what they had, and she feels awful about it. But she is very supportive. I've done a few things with Kate and done a few siblings things, and she's always very supportive of me and what I'm doing with it.
Amy's mum actually made muffins for a workshop that I ran for parents a couple of years ago. So yes, she was very supportive.
She's a muffin maker, so she obviously is very engaged with everyone's experience. She sounds like a very good mum. Kate, you're trying to develop peer support networks for adult siblings. Why is that important? Many years later, obviously, often these people are now out of the home, living their own independent lives, for them to have that kind of support.
And I think that peer support can be useful for siblings for two reasons. One is to just meet up with other people that have had the same experience, and often they've never met someone who is in that situation. So, you know, we know that getting together with other people who share our experiences can be incredibly empowering and helpful. And so we've run various online groups or whatever for siblings, but we're also wanting to do the face-to-face as well so that siblings can meet up with other siblings. No one understands the sibling experience like another sibling. The other reason that we're doing these groups is because there's a lack of information and knowledge by siblings often about the service system that's out there for their brother or sister. And if they're trying to support their brother or sister, they may not understand the system, they may not understand the NDIS. And so one of the other reasons for getting siblings to be able to come together is to give them that information. We'll have some information online as part of the project, but, you know, I think people can often share their own experiences face-to-face and, well, this worked and that didn't work. And at this stage, we're looking for peer support leaders in different places all around Australia. Those support leaders will get some training and support, and then the idea will be that they will facilitate local groups for adult siblings.
The other part of this equation is, of course, it's siblings who are often responsible for the care of their disabled siblings once parents pass on. I mean, I've seen this in my own family. This sort of thing happens because this is a lifelong commitment.
Well, that's right. And siblings are coming to this in so many different ways. You know, they might have moved away from their family and then make contact again. We had one sibling who had contact online with other siblings, and through that she got the strength to actually go to the organisation that was supporting her brother. He'd been quite aggressive to her, and so she used to have panic attacks. But they supported that relationship to come together again, and now they have a wonderful relationship. Other siblings will have been involved for many, many years with support services for their brother or sister, and others might, their parents might suddenly pass away and they might be left with that responsibility very suddenly. I've had siblings talk about being groomed to take over that care from a very young age, and so often they need different things, but there's also a big commonality there, and hopefully these groups will be able to help with that and give them the information that they need. But also those who've had more experience might be able to help other siblings.
Amy, I'd love to hear the final word from you. Do you think about that much when your parents are no longer around and the kind of role that you and perhaps your brother might have?
I do, but I feel very lucky often when talking with other siblings. My parents, it was never instilled or sort of suggested that we would ever be completely responsible for him when they pass away. So he's now in a group home, and he will be in a group home until he probably passes away as well. So I don't feel that pressure that other siblings feel, but I've certainly heard a lot of siblings talk about that, and I feel very lucky that my parents were sort of realistic and understanding that we need to have our lives as well. And yeah, so I mean, it does concern me. I want to make sure that he's well looked after and cared for properly.
Of course.
but that won't be something that I would have to worry about taking on myself personally.
I want to thank both of you for coming in and having this really honest conversation with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Joining me tonight, Amy Patra. She grew up with a brother with autism, and Kate Strome, who's the director of Siblings Australia.